This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Horrify you, all in fun, of course. A challenge in horror, so to speak. Now, I know that you're not a person who is easily frightened. Monsters, ghosts, the dead. Who gets scared at that sort of thing anymore? You don't. Or do you? Do you ever think of the undead, the ghostly ones crowded under their gravestones, the restless dead, millions of them there under the ground? May we try something?
I was walking down the street when out the corner of my eye I saw a pretty little thing approaching me. She said, I never seen a man who looks so all alone. Could you use a little company? If you pay the right price, your evening will be nice and you can go and send me on my way. I said, you're such a sweet young thing, why you do this to yourself? She looked at me and this is what she said. Oh, there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay, I got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know I can't slow down, I can't hold back, though you know I wish I could. Another ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good. Not even 15 minutes later, I'm still walking on the street when I saw the shadow of a man creep out of sight. And then he swept up from behind, he put a gun up to my head. He made it clear he wasn't looking for a fight. He said, give me all you got, I want your money, not your life. If you try to make a move, I won't think twice. I told him you could have my cash, but first you know I gotta ask, what made you wanna live this kind of life? He said that
to sustain our population till the end of the month.
We're talking about the extinction of the human race.
The blood substitute is not found immediately.
This
will happen to all of us.
A substitute would replace our need for a human supply.
There will always be those who are willing to pay extra for the real thing.
We need your help.
We want to rebuild the human race.
A blood substitute is not a cure.
I was like you once.
And I'm no more.
Who are you?
We're the folks with the crossbows.
That last breath of humanity will vanish as soon as the blood does.
I found a cure. I can change you back.
What's the cure?
They could kill you.
I'm already dead.
It doesn't hurt me.
Can anyone hear me?
I want to feel how it feels.
They're
Joe Mysteri on the night shift on WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm joined today by the dynamic duo from Australia, the Sperry Brothers, and we're talking about their new film, Daybreakers, an action-adventure roller coaster ride of a vampire movie that opens this Friday, January 8th in New York and across the country. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, how are you?
And I'm sitting here on my, technically left with
Michael and Peter.
Excellent.
And I don't think you're going to be able to tell us apart by that introduction, but that's okay.
All right. So I was a big fan of Undead, and we had a chance to talk when you guys were promoting that here in the States, and I read some of the production notes. And, you know, it's vampires are so in vogue nowadays.
Right.
But as a horror fan, you know, I think everybody has to do, like, their vampire film kind of thing.
Right.
What was it particularly that came into play that for your second film that it was about vampires, and what was that linchpin that got you guys going on this particular story that really said that, yeah, we can really make this one?
When we were looking to do a second project, I don't think we ever thought that we were going to do a vampire film. We just started throwing around ideas, and this idea of a world dominated by vampires really appealed to us, and it wasn't like the I Am Legend version of a world dominated by vampires. It was more that they accept who they are and they try to modify their life to function in this vampire world, and that idea was really interesting to us.
And then the idea, you know, what is the dilemma in the world, and the idea that if almost everyone's a vampire, then there's very few human beings left, so therefore the vampire's food supply is running out, you know, and that, I think that creates a really interesting scenario, and that was something we really wanted to explore.
Yeah, excellent. You know, you mentioned I Am Legend, and I know you guys are big horror film fans because it's obvious in especially Undead, and now carrying through to Daybreakers, but I was wondering, even after the last I Am Legend came out, a lot of people said that they still hadn't made the book. And when I was watching the film, I almost got a sense that this was almost in a similar universe as that, and the fact of, well, how that book ends with the vampire society coming of age kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, you know, in addition to your film references and I Am Legend, were there any other literary references that were influencing you as you were creating the script for the film?
We read a lot of, you know, the kind of traditional myth of vampires and where that sort of came from, and we looked at things like that, but we really wanted to, you know, we've seen so many vampire films, so we were pretty hard on ourselves when we were writing to always try and do something different. In every scene it would be, have we seen this before in this type of movie? And that was incredibly important to us to keep trying to do something different. You know, we were influenced by a lot of stuff, particularly films that are in the genre, and certainly recently in the genre, were influenced in a way that we were trying to not make a version of that movie, like an Underworld or a Blade or anything like that. And it's definitely not Twilight, you know. So we were trying to find our unique voice in that genre.
You know, I think it was interesting, as I sat there and I watched the film, I've seen Undead a couple of times, and I thought there was something interesting in the narrative arc. It almost seemed that, while these are totally different stories, there seemed to be a similarity in the arc of the emotional intensity that happens in the film. So, for example, going back to the opening scene of Undead, comparing that to the opening scene of Daybreakers and the journey that the characters go on, which I think is great because, you know, regardless of the story you're telling there, you know, as Joseph Campbell would say, there are the universal myths that we all appeal to. Was that something that was intentional? Have you thought about that? Or is...
I think what happens is, you mentioned Joseph Campbell, Michael and I, very much into Joseph Campbell and his sort of mythic structure, and when we lay out a script, we follow that kind of model, to kind of help us not go off on tangents. And my favourite films follow the Joseph Campbell model pretty much to a T, and so, you know, if there's similarities, it's because of that.
You've made this film, and you had the experience of doing Undead where, you know, you guys were pretty much working on your laptops and worrying about what you could do and with the capacity that you had for the technology that was available to you. When you went into this film, how much pre-production did you do in terms of knowing what the technology that was going to be available to you on this film and what you were going to try to do, and then maybe where you were going to try to push the envelope a little bit more as to what you could do technically wise in enhancing the visuals.
Well, I mean, this is a surprisingly similar experience to Undead. I mean, Peter and I had to end up doing, we did 350 visual effects for Daybreakers simply because we ran out of money and we couldn't afford another effects house to take on a large chunk of the project. So it felt very similar to Undead. As far as technology, I mean, we've been collaborating with Steve Boyle, our makeup effects artist, ever since we started doing short films. We've known him for a long time, and Steve now works for a better workshop in New Zealand. And so we always get him involved pretty early on in a project, and he's a great collaborator when we're coming up with artwork and doing test makeups and stuff like that. He's really...
He can give us a good idea of what he thinks is feasible, and, you know, whether it's a makeup thing or whether it is computer graphics or whatever it might be. You know, it's great to have somebody... fairly early in the process come on board and collaborate with us.
Well, I think that's the great thing about your films, which when you go back and you look at something like the Da Vinci Code that was made earlier this year, mm-hmm. and the importance that they felt of what they could do with the effects, but still the necessity of building things physically to interact. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys from Undead to what you've done with Daybreakers, I think part of telling any big story is that you have to have that tangible element to relate to the audience. Otherwise, you know, the visuals are all for naught, because still, it's that the prosthetics and some of the makeup and some of the other things that really ground the audience.
Yeah, and I think the actors, I mean, we really did everything in this film is practical to some degree. I mean, there's a digital extension here and there, but the creatures are guys in suits. And I think the actors really appreciate working with a physical thing. It's much easier to act with another actor than a tennis ball attached to a stick, The downside of doing everything practical is it takes a long, long time. I mean, that poor actor who did this big scene where this creature that we call a subsider, which is sort of our messed up, really blood-deprived vampire, comes into Ethan Hawke's house and attacks him. And it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. But that poor actor who did that, who was that playback creature, he was in that makeup chair. It was 10 hours just to get that makeup on. The only parts that weren't covered were his heels and the inside of his ears. Everything else, head to toe, covered. To go through that process, 10-hour makeup, and then be on set for another 10 hours, and then like another 4 hours to get the makeup off, it's so tedious for an actor, and it really is an endurance test for these guys. So there is a downside to practical, but I love practical makeup.
You know, with the technology and the ability to build some sets and interact at this point, I mean, as filmmakers in Australia, your native country, do you really feel that there's any need or that there isn't any story that you could tell and shoot in Australia that you would need to really go and make, like, say, the film in the United States or maybe go to England, or that the technology is there that you know, the world is your oyster at this point for storytelling?
Well, no, I think you can go. I think we can make most things in Australia.
Yeah, I think so. But at the sometimes I'd much rather go to the actual location, you know, if it's New York City. Obviously you can do that in the computer, and Peter Jackson's done it. But ideally, if it's New York City present day, I'd want to come here and shoot in New York.
Exactly, yeah.
I think you think about things like the original Superman movie. Well, I think part of what makes that film great is it's in a real city, and it looks like a real city, and you get those beautiful wide shots, and you look at the new Superman movie, and it doesn't feel real because it's on a backlog.
So Daybreakers as well as Undead, when the story's finished, they leave their open endings. And with vampires being so popular, and as I believe this film will be, you know, very well embraced by the genre fans out there, is this something that, you know, the word franchise exists in your vocabulary, and how does it roll around now?
I don't. Let's wait until we get through this week, and then then, you know, I'm sure if we do well, that'll come up. You know, we try not to think about it too much because we don't want to jinx anything.
Okay. Yeah,
it is. I mean, we have written so much more. There's quite a large backstory that we haven't fully explored. There's lots of ideas we have if we get to do another one. But yeah, I don't want to jinx it.
Okay. And in the meantime, you did kind of a sci-fi zombie movie. You've done what I would call a high-tech vampire film. Are you already thinking about your next project or next hybrid genre film that you want to do?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple things that we're working on.
Okay.
At the moment, there's a script that Michael and I have been writing for quite some time, for at least a year now, that we're really excited about. And it's not a horror film, it's a science fiction film. It's a science fiction adventure film. And then there's also a project that we're developing at the moment with Warner Brothers called Captain Blood, which is a remake of the original Errol Flynn movie, but we're shifting that into science fiction. So it's not pirates, it's pirates in space.
Yeah. You know, and being you guys are fans of the genre, are there things out there where, as you've proven yourself with two very good movies, at what point might you guys take a risk and maybe try to option some other kind of materials?
Oh, we're doing that now.
Okay.
We've got ideas for other projects that aren't horror or science fiction. There's a dramatic project that we're chasing at the moment that we really like. So, I mean, we'll always come back to horror and science fiction. I mean, that is definitely a love of ours, but we'd like to explore all different genres. I don't know if romantic comedy's in there, but definitely a drama and action and thrillers and, you know, I'd love to do a western. You know, I'd love to do a western, so I'd like to play in most genres.
And so at the end of the day, you're sneaking in the back of the theater and you're seeing the audience's reaction to this. You know, everybody comes away with something different, but given the very broad spectrum of the palette that you use in creating this film, what really, at the end of the day, do you hope that the audience comes away with? And I'm not saying, you know, a horror audience, because, you know, they're going to come away with the specific little things, but an audience that now is going to come to see your film that maybe didn't have a chance to experience Undead.
I would, you know, I'd love people to walk away surprised that, you know, that a genre picture, a vampire picture, can have, you know, a certain amount of intelligence to it, and I'd love people I'd love those people to tell their friends that don't like horror movies, come and see this one, because this one's actually good. I just hope people walk away having a good time.
Mm.
I mean, that's my hope, is that people have a good time. You know, it's supposed to be entertaining. It's not too vicious. You know, we're not doing a torture movie. It's not that kind of vicious movie. It's more of a escapist fun with a lot of blood. And I just hope that people go see it and have a good time. Above all, just have a good time.
Excellent. And this has been Joe Massieri on the Night Shift, talking with the directors of the new Lionsgate release, Daybreakers, Peter and Michael Sperry. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Great success with the film.
Thank you.
Thank you.
His charm is so contagious, vaccines have been created for it. Years ago, he built a city out of blocks. Today, over 600,000 people live and work there. He is the only man to ever ace a Rorschach test. Every time he goes for a swim, dolphins appear. Alien abductors have asked him to probe them. If he were to give you directions, you'd never get lost, and you'd arrive at least 5 minutes early. His legend precedes him, the way lightning precedes thunder. He is the most interesting man in the world.
Yes, that's right. I am the most interesting man in the world. And that is why I am here on time, and Mike Sargent is is not. But I am joined by the punctual Byron Saunders.
Things that make you go,
And yes, we are here on
we
the
are here.
On the night shift.
Yes, indeed. Night shift, indeed.
And I'm wondering if when I spoke with Mr. Sargent and he said that he was going to be 20 minutes... Yeah, like 11:20. I'm thinking maybe he meant 12:20.
At this point,
or maybe he meant 12:40. But so
yes.
I don't know.
All right,
one can only guess.
Yes, well, it's okay.
Oh, and I wonder if this could be Mr. Chris Taylor on the phone.
Probably so.
Yeah. Good morning. You're on the air.
It is.
What?
Because I'm in a time warp, man. But why I'm laughing is because I talked to Mike too, and he said 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Oh, you got the same 20. Huh?
There you go. We all got the 20.
But the only important person is you, man. That was a great interview, by the way, man.
Thank you.
I wanted to go on.
You like my?
I want to just continue. It was real? You were really getting into something.
Thank you.
Know? You.
Hold on a second here. Good morning, BL. You're on the air. Hello.
Hey.
Oh. That was Mr. Num.
Yes.
So I'm trying to, Mr. Taylor, Mr. Saunders.
Yes, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year, Bart. We did that, Bart.
Yes, that's
but,
okay.
It's kind of interesting because I was out in Portland, and I met these guys, and I'm trying to get a sponsor for the radio show, especially after I saw their commercial. So are you ready for this, Mr. Taylor?
Yeah.
All right. Here you go. This is.
We all just get along at the Red House Furniture.
We can.
At the Red House.
I'm Richard, a.k.a. Big Head. I work at the Red House, and I'm black.
At the Red
House. I like pumping iron and pumping furniture into people's homes.
I'm Johnny, a.k.a. T-Engage. I work at the Red House, and I'm white. I like deer hunting, bass fishing, and extending credit to all people.
At the Red House.
I'm black, and I love the Red House.
I'm white, and I love the Red House.
I'm a black woman, and I love the Red House.
I am white, and the Red House is for me.
At the Red House.
A house of diversity.
Yes.
There you have it.
Look at the sofa. It's perfect for a black person or a white person.
This mattress is perfect for a white person or a black person.
At the Red House, where black people and white people buy furniture.
These guys are two guys on a truck.
What is
it? I'll tell you.
Joe, where did you get this?
At the Red House, man.
Oh, man. You know, Joe,
yes.
People are getting incited right now. You are inciting the audience.
It's a real furniture store.
Yes. I'm looking at it.
I believe you, Joe, but, you know.
Two guys in a truck.
Two guys in a pickup truck.
Yeah. Well, no. Paddle
like, so what if it's raining?
So, there you go.
Hail, if it's raining. We give you a discount. We'll take $10 off. So guess what? That's the way it is.
Oh, please.
At the Red House.
At the Red House.
Our pickup is ready when you are.
So these guys have to be the most innovative commercial guys that they turned me on to.
Oh, my God.
It's like hysterical. If you go on YouTube, talk about life is like science fiction. Now, I'm going to set up one more thing because these guys are funny as all heck. They were doing like a calling card thing for their, little marketing guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, B.I., good morning. You're on the air. Hello? Turn your radio off.
Hi, this is Aunt Diane.
Hello,
and
Aunt
I'm
Diane.
Coming home from JFK Hospital, and I wanted to tell you, I thought that was my laugh for the day.
There it
the
is.
The Red House.
And I would buy furniture from the Red House.
Tell
me. There you go.
I'm Aunt Diane, and I am a black woman, but I'm considered red. And I would buy furniture from the Red House.
Well, they'll bring it right over in the pickup.
They will.
I'm doing a good job.
Thank you.
And God bless you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Indeed. Yes.
All the best from the best.
There you
to
go.
The best.
To
thank
the
you,
best.
Aunt Diane.
Joe,
God bless y'all.
Look at that. Now, they did one other thing. They went to a Taco Bell.
Yes.
and they were trying to rethink the jingle. So what they do is they drive up to the window, and they wrote this song, and they order off the song. Well, I'll let you hear it.
All right.
You can see these things on YouTube also.
You all remember the drive-through raps that everybody was doing a while back? We even did one.
We think it's high time to bring back the musical drive-through order, but why not switch genres?
What about a folk song?
I'm sharing this with Byron.
Yes.
Pretty good. How are you?
I'll start with a taco, soft like a cloud. I want mine crunchy, I like to eat loud. I'll choose a chalupa, I'll grab a gordita, and two taco salads for our senoritas. And a burrito supreme, with extra sour cream, a cylindrically shaped seasoned beef dream.
A taquito,
and Doritos,
a cinnamon twist,
a chicken border bowl.
Are you getting all this?
All right, so
and you know that nothing beats a
Mexican pizza.
We'll take two of those.
But please hold the diced tomatoes. And I admit I've always felt
I'm in love with a Mexi-Man.
Take mine with a little extra love and think of me
as the cheese drops from your Taco Bell glove.
And that's it.
No, that's not it. I also want a double-decker taco because I'm feeling wild and make my sauce fire.
He'll take mild.
And we'll take two Mountain Dew Baja Blast for a chance at $25 cash.
I'm told there's a winner for every 5 minutes, but I'm stealing your online code if you win it.
Why would you do that?
You owe me 25 bones.
I owe you 5.
Plus interest.
It was a loan.
And I think we'll be satisfied if we get some Mexican rice on the side.
Yeah, sure. We can get something to drink.
Yeah, the Mountain Dew Baja Blast,
oh,
two of them.
We got $2 left. Okay, can we repeat the order back to you?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, soft taco, a hard taco, a chalupa, a gordita, two taco salad for the lady. A burrito supreme with extra sour cream, and cheesy fiesta potatoes, and chorizo, cinnamon twist, dusty chicken bowl, and two Mexican pizza, but hold the tomatoes. Double-decker tacos, two large Baja Blast, and a side of rice. Is that correct, sir?
You're pretty amazing.
I think that's it.
That's the first time someone has ever gotten the order right.
$69, all right.
Wait.
How did that guy do that?
Oh, it's goodness. The song. It's the song. Yes.
Gracious.
So now we have to actually purchase the food, I guess.
That's good.
Mr. Taylor?
Yes.
What'd you think of that?
You're insane.
I find these things. What can I tell you?
Oh, my. So you met these guys?
No, actually, a friend of mine turned me on to them. So, because they have all these, like, great little YouTube things, and this was their promo company. And I believe they're out on the West Coast someplace. I think they're in Seattle, so, or Oregon. So, I didn't even give out the number, and the phone is ringing. It's impossible. But yeah, good morning. You're on the air.
Yo.
Yes.
Listen, it was a great echo chamber you did before. Only trouble is, when are you going to play it in English so I can understand what was said?
Are you making a derogatory remark against the Australians?
No, I'm making a statement of truth.
Are you saying you don't understand their accents?
No, I couldn't really make out. I can understand Australian English, but I couldn't hear what they were saying. It was so echoish.
And you want to know something? I said to Byron when we were beforehand, they put me in a room that was old concrete and glass windows.
In like a jail cell?
Yeah, well, kind of. It's this hotel here in New York. It's called the Ace Hotel. It used to be this like commercial building, but they did nothing really when they turned it into a hotel. So there you go. It sounds like an echo chamber. Thank you, Monroe.
Well, thank you. It's sad that I have to look like I'm a derogatory.
All right. Unbelievable.
Monroe is me.
Yeah, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Yes.
The number here,
Mr. 212-209-2900.
There you go.
You too.
Unbelievable.
Can be a star.
So what else did you do in Portland, Oregon, Joe?
What did I do in Portland, Oregon? I saw some of the sights.
Mm-hmm.
I climbed up a couple of mountains.
Tell us about that, because that was interesting. You were telling me you went hiking.
Yes, I went hiking on a couple of the mountains. I saw Mount Tabor on one side and Mount Hood on the other, and off in the distance, Mount St. Helen.
I was about to say, you were in that vicinity.
Yes, I was.
Yes.
And now, supposedly, Oregon is Portland and the area is all under this super volcano.
Mm-hmm.
So
the one that will explode.
Eventually explode.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. Kind of like the one that took Woody Harrelson out in 2012.
No, Art Carney.
No, 2012.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
But Art Carney was in the other movie, St. Helens, if you...
Oh.
In the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever that came out.
After that went boom. And you know they shot, they used a lot of that area surrounding the volcano for the road. The picture that came out this past year. That was one of the locations they used.
You had a good time?
Yeah, I had a good time. Went to Voodoo Donuts.
Mm-hmm.
So.
How was your flight? Did you take your shoes off and all that?
Yes, I did.
Did you notice increased security, I hope?
No, you know what was interesting?
Yep, what?
First of all, I flew JetBlue Airlines, and JetBlue has their own terminal, which basically they were working on before, you know, just as these TSA regulations were coming down the pike,
mm-hmm.
and they get it. I mean, they've got the lines working, they've got enough counters, they got the whole, they get it. Very, very smooth. Mm-hmm. But here's the irony of the situation. So, you know, I have this expired driver's license, which I use to travel. And
not good.
It was slightly inconvenient flying out. You know, they wanted a couple additional pieces of ID, and they did a little, you know, the whole shakedown kind of thing, because Sicily is in the Mediterranean there, so it's not it could be northern Italy, it could be northern Africa, it could be, you know, so I look like Joseph the Sicilian terrorist. But anyway, so I got on the plane there, and I got on the plane coming back, and it was a lot easier coming out of Oregon. I just whipped out the IDs again. The guy asked me to sign the back of the thing, and that was it. It was fine. 2 seconds. No additional shakedown or anything like that. But there are more strip clubs per capita in Oregon, Portland, Oregon, than in any other place in the United States.
Goodness.
And you have to show a valid ID.
Yes.
So you couldn't get into any of the strip joints? Is that what you're
saying? 3 times, you're out. I went to 3 different ones with some people we were hanging with. Couldn't get in.
You couldn't get into a strip joint.
There you go.
You. That's kind of bizarre.
It is. It's very bizarre. But so, I got to tell you, this is the first time that I've ever come back to from someplace. And this was my first time being in Portland. This is the first time I ever came back from someplace, and I really had that touristy thing where I was like, I hated coming back to New York.
Wow.
First of all, they've got... They've got everything. The blocks there are half a block, half the size of a block of a New York City street, and pretty much you can walk anywhere. The transportation system runs the same schedule 7 days a week. You get the transfer; it's $2, and the transfer is good for three hours, and you can get back on the same bus you were on to go back the other way.
That's different, yes.
Plus, you can buy a monthly card.
Okay.
Two for your zone,
yes.
and that way as well.
So you like Portland?
I like Portland. It was.
How many strip joints you said is there?
It's the highest per capita in
for the amount of people.
Right. So
that's like a weird kind of mix because you know you've got like, don't you think?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of
You know, those cold and lonely winters there.
Oh, well, how cold? Well, you said it was
40.
Yeah, that's what you were saying. Yeah.
When I landed. So
it's warmer than here, there than it is
yes.
here.
And it was funny. I visited this one hotel. it was called the Nines, brand new hotel there. Very art and funky, but it's also very green. They have a restaurant in the place. It's called the Farmer's Market, and in there they have a pantry, and in the pantry they have all these canned products
yes.
that's done by the staff there.
that they can their own.
They can their own, and while they're cooking, they'll take stuff off the shelf when they're making dishes.
Yeah.
Plus, they don't buy the meat from the butcher. They buy the whole dead animal, and then they butcher it themselves, and they use everything from the carcass. They don't get rid of anything.
Wait a minute. They have fried chicken lips?
I don't know. I didn't
ask them.
But on top of that, they brew their own beer.
No, microbrewery is big out there.
Plus, they make their own moonshine. At the
hotel. Some of that.
I had some, and they make their own absinthe.
Okay.
No, that's that Louisiana stuff that you told me to drink, and I drank it, and I went crazy.
Yes, you went crazy, as if you weren't crazy already. So.
But the was there any like moment that did you see any axemen, the guys that you know that cut the trees, of those people over there and stuff, or that?
No, I didn't see any axemen.
No,
I saw plenty of, and you know what was really interesting is like walking around, people are so green there. I mean, there's all these bike paths.
Yes.
They have people at their houses have gardens in the front and stuff, and they grow their own stuff. So you could be walking by somebody's house, and even though it was winter there, you know, like you had these rosemary bushes, mm-hmm. so fresh rosemary, oregano, still dried kind of thing. Yes.
Sounds like you're moving, Joe.
Well, lots of resale shops. Remember like New York used to be, Mr. Antiquer,
mm-hmm.
where you had all the little shops with all the stuff there?
Yeah. Like
tons of them.
The real feel.
Tons of them. And I have to say I was impressed by the bookstores there because the biggest one there was Powell's. I mean, they actually had a huge horror section. They had the used books and sci-fi and mystery, but they had the used books mixed in with the new books.
Yes.
So there was some great classic stuff there that you could just go and pick up that you won't find any sitting on a Borders or a Barnes & Nobles here in New York. Lots of art galleries, tons of them. Lots of art all over the place.
So where did we go wrong?
I don't know. And the people are just...
Who's supposed to be the cultural capital here?
It's you know, people are nicer there and friendly and lots of brew pubs and good
greed.
Meals.
Huh? I think greed is where realtor greed, wouldn't you say,
greed,
is where
yes.
we went wrong.
Yeah, I guess
the homeless people are nice there,
you
too.
Know, I mean, we can sell you a place for, you know, $2 million, you know, $3 million. And all of a sudden, everyone that, you know, the artists
mm-hmm.
are all pushed out.
Yeah. Good morning, Elena.
Hi, Joe.
You look like you were defrosting.
I am a little bit.
Happy birthday.
Cold. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Elena.
Wasn't Mike with you?
He was.
What happened to Mike?
Oh, I stomped on him.
You stomped What'd
you do?
On him?
Yeah.
He's been deflated.
Yeah.
You dumped him?
Done.
Mike has been deflated. I don't know.
Byron, you going to sing happy birthday to her?
Of course.
You got a moment to hear your moment, Byron.
So, I love it.
Elena.
I'll bring pot down the
Happy mirror. Birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday to you, happy birthday
Elena.
To you.
Say Elena.
Happy birthday. There you go.
Say Elena.
There it is. Yes. That's awesome.
All right. So another year, another good look, and hey.
Can you just say
fine.
Elena just once?
Elena, happy birthday.
Hey! There you go. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, sweetie. Mwah. Oh, yeah. Oh, a big smooch.
I got a kiss.
Yes, she did. I got one, too.
Thank you, Chris, for suggesting it.
Well, Byron has his moments, you know, and while Mike's away, Byron can play.
I can play, that's right. Sing, and nobody says, hey.
So. No, it was beautiful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, very
that means a lot to me, actually.
To my friend.
Thank you.
So, Joe.
Yes.
Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
I'm impressed with your details.
I could think about it. You know, I could really think about moving there.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm getting that vibe. It just seems like you know, Joe will be king of the king of Portland.
Well, I don't know about that. But
I have a cousin out there.
No. Now we're going to have to do something about your ID here. So
yeah, I know.
Keep
I know.
You out of trouble, man.
We'll do that. Good morning, BA. You're on the air.
Hey, happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
And
hello.
Who is this?
Huh?
Who this be?
This be Vlad.
Oh, Vlad, how are you?
How you doing, Joe?
All right. You defrosting?
When Mike comes in, tell him I still want my premium.
No.
That's why he's not coming in.
No.
And over, like, I don't know, a year and a half?
No.
He's hiding.
You got it.
No, he didn't.
I can be your premium.
Are you serious?
I'm
what,
dead
does he owe, what does he owe you?
He owes me the CDs.
For which one?
I don't know. It was damn good.
Damn good music. That has to be DGM, man.
It was damn good rip-off.
I just want to tell people over the air that every time I meet Joe, like, he hand-delivers me his premium. Like, he always delivers.
A man of his word.
Mm. What else
always
does he deliver?
And always
well,
goes above
Mike
and beyond.
Will take, Mike will take care of it. He will. I mean,
I'll just have to send him more Photoshop pictures of himself again.
I don't know exactly what... I don't know what happened. There's just no, you know, he'll get
I mean,
it.
I made it as easy as possible for him. I said I would pick it up at the station, and he's like, no, I'll mail it to you, and I guess the mailing system is still slow. I don't know.
Snail mail.
Yeah.
Tell him he should say he could send it to you via you send it, and you can download it.
No, you will get it.
So.
Yeah.
And if not, you'll get me.
Ooh, well, there it is.
Sounds like a good consolation prize.
Elaine is substituting herself. And it's her birthday, so therefore,
it's my birthday.
Special
so
treat.
Therefore, you have to buy me a dessert.
Dessert.
Wrap her up and send her over to my P.O. box.
Yeah, but wouldn't it go stale?
No, I'm always fresh.
I just want to wish everyone a happy New Year.
Well,
and
thank
like
you.
I said, tell Mike
yes,
I want the premium.
It's done deal.
All right,
yeah.
Vlad.
Thank
good
you.
Hearing from you.
Yes,
we'll give him a little bit of a hard time about it,
yes.
And he'll get on that.
All right, you guys have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
Bless you.
All right, let's see if I get Chris. I'm sorry if I hang up on you.
Don't hang up.
Oh, okay. Now I know you. Look at the phones are ringing.
Just figure out where I am and then just put it.
Yeah. Good morning. Hello.
Hey.
Yes.
Can you ask that caller to at least wish me a happy birthday?
So, Elena, happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Oh, wow.
Happy birthday, Elena. I would sing like he did, but he did a real good job.
he did an amazing job.
Yeah. So you kissed him. That was good.
Oh, hey, I'm in good voice.
Of
you
course.
Know, the kiss. I work for kisses.
Well, my brother, you deserved it.
All right. Thank you.
Now, let me see. There's so much. But anyway, I want to concur with you. And you brought back so many memories when I was in Portland years ago.
Yes.
And the people were so nice to me. They were just so nice to me. It was amazing. And like you said, the place is just really, really cool.
It is. It's so laid back and wonderful. So,
brought back a lot of memories. Oh. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
All right.
I'm glad.
And I don't like horror movies anyway. But
do you like science fiction better? Or he's gone.
So where did Mike take you this evening?
Chuck E. Cheese.
No, he didn't.
Is that where you wanted
Chuck
to go?
Chuck E. Cheese?
It's almost as good as McDonald's.
Oh,
order anything you want, the dollar, man. You happy birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
Here you go. This is for Elena. Here you go.
Yeah.
I'm not singing happy birthday, but this will do.
You guys, this is all Kyle's mom's fault.
Oh, wait, it's the wrong one.
Kyle's mom is the one.
It's the wrong one. No, this is it.
Danny, he didn't.
Hey!
There you go.
My birthday, my birthday.
Thank you. That was really nice. We don't even give out that.
Can I keep doing that for this?
I don't know.
That's my birthday present.
Yeah, good morning. You're on the air.
It's my birthday, my birthday.
First, happy birthday to the young lady.
Thank you.
Okay. But I was traveling on a Greyhound bus going to Michigan some years back. And struck up a conversation with her middle-aged man like myself, middle-aged woman, and I was very impressed with what he had to say about Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been reading a lot about it. Several years ago, the Times had a beautiful article about certain cities, blah, blah, blah. However, I need to know, what about senior citizens like myself? What's the rent like? What are the rents, you know, like over there for like a one-bedroom or studio for seniors?
Well, I must investigate that. I don't know. I wasn't at the point where I was looking at rents.
Oh, okay.
So I wasn't quite there yet. First time there, visiting friends. You know, very impressed with everything. The food prices were reasonable. We went to this one Thai restaurant that was run by a family.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you order your main dish.
Yes.
Before you even order anything, they come to the table. They want your ST. Get the tea included, all refills. Even the nice Tai Chi with the coconut milk.
Okay,
Free
and what's
refills.
The population? Is it, like, New York very, like, international?
In the city during the day, I saw a lot of people who, you know, had the full spectrum. At night, lots of young families, though. And a lot
I heard that.
A lot of mixed families.
Okay.
Yes,
so,
I heard also.
And everybody, even the homeless people there were nice.
Yeah, I heard.
From a listener.
Nice. I also heard the environment was very lovely.
It was. It was very green, very well kept.
Yes, yes. So that intrigued me because as a former florist, I just still like a lot of greenery and all of that. But no, nevertheless, I'm retired and a senior citizen now. But I'm missing the flavor of New York. I'm born and raised in Harlem, and it's just like little cookie cutter houses popping up. You know, like prefab looking things.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over New York now, everywhere you go. And I'm missing the energy. It's just dead.
New York is becoming corporate gray.
Yes, it's so. I think they're going to be sorry. I really think New York is going to start losing its reputation as the kind of
vibe. It's vibe.
Vibe. It's nothing happening. Yeah. You know, you can't. The Greenwich Village that I grew up in at 18, you could go down and see all these clubs and Harlem with tons of clubs and people. Activity and life. It's gone.
Yep. And most of the live music now, if it isn't the bigger venues, all the smaller clubs are gone. Most of it happens in Williamsburg now.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
And this is where I know the greed, and with the Bloomberg, you know, signature behind all this stuff, and the need for him to have won this third election, was to get the developments completed for those folks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think in the end, it's going to be really something they will, I think, regret for a long time.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, anyway, I'm enjoying
folks. Thank you very much.
All right, have a blessed day.
What's the number here, birthday girl?
212-209-2900.
There's someone else that's calling in. It's going to be a surprise. It's also their birthday, too, Elena.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
so you have to
see. Good morning, and you're on the air.
Happy birthday, Elena.
Hi, how are you?
You didn't do that like in an Indian chant?
It's me,
that's
I can't believe your birthday is today, though.
Because I know it's him.
It's just the voice.
Really, today?
I'm in radio.
Is it the 11th or is it the 12th, Elena?
It's the 11th. We're cheating a little bit. Oh, that's okay. I think that's
past
fair.
The top.
Okay. Well, we did go on at midnight, but you were late, so technically your birthday's over.
But I still get cake.
I know.
So he took you to Chuck E. Cheese?
Yeah, Chuck E. Cheese.
And what did you have?
Pizza.
Pizza
and tokens.
That's right, and tokens.
It's pizza and
happy
tokens.
Happy birthday, Elena.
Thank you.
Who's this?
You're very sweet. Who
Clover?
Is this?
You.
What? Who?
It's my birthday, too.
Oh, it is?
It is.
Yes, it is.
Really? The 12th or the 11th?
The 11th.
Do you know who this is? Joe, do you know who that is?
You don't even know who this is, do you, Elena?
It's
Danny. Hey, Danny.
Danny can't believe, and he's you and
Wait
you and him have the same birthday. That's just too weird.
Danny, are
that
you in
weird.
Japan yet?
No,
not yet.
In the summer.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You've been drinking, Danny. You sound a little hoarse.
Yes, I've been drinking. I am drunk right now.
Are you drunk?
Uh oh.
Yes. Danny's drunk.
Good boy.
Oh, you guys should hook up on the phone later. You and Elena. There it is.
I'd hook up with you, Danny. You know it.
I'm waiting.
I'm your pre-summer tour.
The pre-summer tour. There you go.
Warren, do you want to say happy birthday to Danny?
Of course.
Elena should volunteer. Danny, Elena should volunteer for the USO, right?
That's right. Hey.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just too funny.
Yeah. There you go.
I did get some new lingerie. Yay for
me. Hey, Danny, how did the Marine party, man? What did you do today? What did you drink? Jack? What have you been drinking?
The Jaeger bombs.
Jaeger
bombs?
Jaeger
bombs. How can you still talk?
Oh, my God. I'm messed
how many?
Up right now.
How many?
He's messed up.
He's had several.
Oh, man.
It's okay, Danny. Have fun, my friend.
Yeah.
Yes, do have fun.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Danny.
And thank you.
And come pick me up later.
This is for Elena and Danny.
I will.
best song. Oh, yeah.
Byron does the gopher really good.
Do it.
Do what you like. Ooh, yeah, Kenny Loggins, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those are for...
No, do the gopher. Come on, please. The gopher.
It's for all the people celebrating birthdays.
Their birthday's on the 11th and the 12th.
There you go. Oh.
Chris? And we lost Chris. Look at that.
I love that song.
Yeah, good morning. Hello?
From the Arapahoes.
From the, there he is, Mr. Indian.
From the Arapahoes.
I'm not going to even test that one. Yeah, good morning, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello.
Once in the anarchist movement, a big split between those who think violence is necessary and those who think that violence betrays the entire concept of anarchism, which is human liberty. And if you shoot somebody, you take away all their liberties at once. And it's not a very libertarian anarchist action.
Well, there you go.
All right, that's insightful.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm back,
John. All right. Now I got you in a good spot.
Hi, Chris.
Oh, good.
So, I couldn't...
What was that was just playing?
I have no idea.
Hey. Was that Eleanor Roosevelt or something? Or or whatever? Catherine Hepburn doing Eleanor Roosevelt?
Catherine Hepburn doing Eleanor Roosevelt. Live on stage.
I just
want to
wish y'all happy birthday.
That was awful.
I know.
That impression.
I can't do Catherine Hepburn. You
want
me to, I think you can do Catherine Hepburn.
I can do Catherine Hepburn.
You can do Catherine Hepburn. You know you can.
This is the WBAI Elena birthday party.
Right. We're having too much fun.
I would love to be doing Jaeger bombs right now. That would be awesome.
Yeah, good morning. You're on the air.
Happy birthday, Elena.
Thank you.
Keep it clean tonight, sweetie.
It's always clean and clean shaven.
Just showing the love. B.A.I., good morning,
mucho
you're on the
love,
air.
Mucho love.
I feel like I should eat something, like birthday cake or something.
Go out and get one. Come and bring it up.
Carvel?
Baskin-Robbins?
Have some Bruckner Boulevard birthday cake.
Yeah, you're on the air.
That was Judith Malina.
Was that you, George? What? Was that you playing that, George?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, that's who it sounded like to me. The voice was Judith Malina. She's been on this station.
Yeah.
And the subject matter, you know, is right up her alley. I read an article on Portland several months ago in the New York Times, the Escapes section.
Uh-huh.
A big 2.5-page article, pictures and all. Mm-hmm. And...
did you psychically send the information to Joe, and that's how he got it?
No, I don't.
Because Joe have that psychic thing happening.
Thanks.
Well, for the gentleman, and I got so interested, you know, it sounded like a fascinating city, you know, with all its greenness and its social life and artistic and pubs and restaurants and food carts. Don't they have a tramway there somewhere, Joe?
Yeah, they have a tramway. They do. They have this other thing I thought was very, very interesting. They have some of these, like, you know, outdoor parking lots, and they set them up with food carts. So you have all different kind of, like, food carts, different specialties that are there. So, you know, some of them are open all week. Some of them just Monday through Friday. But and they're very highly regulated. They have it was funny because at one point I was talking to one of the guys, and only one guy can handle the money, that the guys who handle the food can't touch the money, and then the one person who's, like, you know, putting the food in the bag with it can't touch the money either, and it's, like, it's very, very, very interesting.
Well, it's called filthy lucre, money is.
There you go.
Okay.
So.
Filthy lucre.
So, anyhow, I got so interested in the city, I forget how I did this, I got the number... The 800 number, this is for the gentleman who called earlier about senior citizens and rents.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So yes.
That was a woman.
And this was very interesting. The reporter doing the story, at the end of the story, said...
I like this song. What's the song?
Said he was so impressed, you know, he was overwhelmed and overjoyed to be in that city and what a great city it was. And a friend of his, at the end of the article, a friend of his turns to him and says, well, when are you going to move here?
Uh-huh.
And the last line of the article was, you know, that was a thought that I had, so I might just do that, period.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I mean, so I got in touch with the newspaper called The Oregonian.
Yeah, I saw copies of that while I was there.
Mm-hmm. It is, I think, the oldest newspaper, or maybe the second oldest in the United States. And the reason I got it was to look for an apartment. And as far as the rents go, they are a little lower than the rents in New York City. You know, one's a studio or this or that, you know, $800, $1,200, $1,000. Not exorbitant rents from what I could see. There were a lot of places which had no pets.
Well, they're, Ed, please, they're all about the dogs out there.
Are they?
Yes.
I'm glad to hear that.
All about the dogs. So you and Elena would fit in well out there.
Yeah.
Hello.
So.
Yeah.
George, how many years have you lived in New York, George? Your whole life,
all
right?
All my life.
Yeah. You admit
and
it.
And that's many years.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
you'd miss it. I am
impressed and or inspired or confounded by people who say, who can sort of define and categorize New York City in terms of this neighborhood, that neighborhood, and people do this, you know, all these generalizations. Somehow my mind doesn't, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but I can't, you know, remember the ethos of an entire period of time. You know, I could, for my own self, cite, you know, things that I have done, you know, at this period of time, at that, you know, here, there, in this neighborhood, that neighborhood, et cetera. But like one of the calls tonight said, you know, New York is this, and the energy is that. I could never somehow tune into that kind of, you know, thinking about.
Well, George, I got to ask you one question. As you're getting older, do you feel that time is speeding up? Does it feel like things are going faster?
No, I mean, there are some days where it seems like it. They're just, you know, I drink a little bit too much coffee and the clock seems to be moving at a little bit faster pace than normal. But other than that, nope.
What about you, George? Does it feel like things are speeding up?
Pardon me?
Does it feel like things are speeding up as you're getting older?
No, but what does happen as you tend to value life more. I tell you, I try, you know, to do more. With what's left for me, you know, on the mortality clock. So, you know, it actually it's good for me in a way, you know, because it energizes me, you know, keeps me interested in things, you know, that are happening in my life or not happening in my life. And, you know, time becomes very precious. The New York Times had a book. No, it was the Wall Street Journal, which is a great paper, by the way. Had an article of a book review and written by a professor of some kind. The title of the article was, of his book, is From Eternity to Here. And he discusses time and ponders the question without arriving at any definitive answer, because it's a very difficult and amorphous subject, is that his question was, why does time move forward? Why can it not move in some other direction?
Well, there you go.
There you go.
God, that is
and then
perplexing.
Huh?
It's perplexing. Well,
perplexing.
Thank you for your... I'm going to...
So that gentleman, if he calls 800 information... What I did was I got in touch with the Oregonian, and I got them. They sent me two free weekend editions of the entire paper. You know, so I was able to, you know, get a really, you know, wider scope on you know, what the city is like.
Wow.
Yeah. And
there
they
it is, Joe. Not everybody excited about Portland.
We're all going to Portland.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Actually, I was intrigued recently by an article.
What was the weather like when you were there?
Well,
40s,
he said it was
50s.
In the 40s and 50s.
Clear, overcast.
First day it was rainy, then it was overcast. Sun came out a couple of times, so it was nice.
Yeah.
So, all right, George.
Happy birthday. Elena. Oh, yeah,
thank you, so much.
And
I really appreciate it.
Loving kisses to Fernando.
That'll get the dog in
I will let him know.
All right. The time right here is now 12:59, and you're on the night shift. Streaming to you. In, right directly into your subconscious.
That's right.
Via Larry, WBAI.
Did you miss New York when you were
and
you
on
were
the
gone?
Web at WBAI.
Yes, I did. I missed the energy.
The energy.
Yes.
And Atlanta is popping, you know. Mm. You were like in a growth stage down
yeah.
there.
Atlanta's a big town. It's not a city. It's a big town. Pretending to be a city. It's got many, many issues to deal with. Mm. But, you know, Atlanta's a nice place. It's very beautiful. You know, I liked it, but it's slow. And when you get back to New York and this energy that's just driving itself, once you hook in back into the energy of New York, there is no other city like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a moving feast. But I recently read in the New York Times that one of the best places to live is Costa Rica.
Costa Rica?
There's nobody's there.
Well, do you know that they dissolved their army back in, I believe, 1974? So they have stopped spending their money on defense. And they've put most of it into education and to making their country a livable, sustainable place. And it's happened. It's worked. And,
wow.
it's been identified as one of the best places to live in this world. Costa Rica. Who would have thought, you know?
What would you do in Costa Rica except...
Well, the beaches are beautiful. The food is plenty.
Mm.
You know, the people are wonderful. They're not aggressive in terms of, making war. And their educational system is rated as one of the best. So, it's an intelligent place to be.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, being that we're starting the new year, I know that Mike liked
yes.
to talk about,
yes.
you know,
yes.
like weird products.
Yes.
But what if we talked about weird uses for products that are currently available?
Like,
for example, 6 of the weirdest things that you could do with Coca-Cola.
Oh,
I want to hear this.
So,
well, and having been... from Atlanta.
There is an urban legend that says you can use Coke as a spermicide.
It was indeed sold as a contraceptive.
Right.
Back in the beginning days of Coca-Cola.
Get out.
Yes, true. Very true.
So
it was an elixir.
I'm sorry.
Is that a true? Is it a truism or is that
that's
just
truism.
A,
that, yes. That's a truism.
What is? What are the directions?
You can use it as that.
Well,
it'd be like, hey, I'd like to have a sip of this for a minute here.
Well, it's apparently a study reported in 1985 found that New Coke was not especially effective as such, but the older formulas of Coke and especially Diet Coke were effective. Later studies was dubious. So there you go.
Do you pour it on?
There was no, like, how-to book. Like, you know, like, when you buy an enema and it has, like, the little pamphlet how to use it and stuff kind of thing. No, they don't sell it.
Wait, well, then what's...
Joe, why would you use that as an analogy? That's just too bizarre.
I don't understand.
Like, you can use anything else. Let me just talk about...
Moving on.
No. Chris.
Wait, let's... We'll
it removes
come back
acid batteries.
Chris,
it
can you battery look acid where rather. You put it?
Right. Where do
no,
you
I'm not
going to
look that up.
Yes, you are.
Listen,
what else
is because
do you
it's
do?
Your birthday.
Yes, I'm the birthday girl. Tell me what
to I knew
to
I shouldn't
it.
Have started with this one.
No.
Coke
right,
will clean chrome.
That's right. It'll clean the acid off of your battery in your car.
So without acknowledging or denying the rumor, even Coca-Cola seems to claim that there might be a grain of truth to that.
Yes.
So
you can go online to the Coca-Cola origins, and it will tell you many things about the original elixir known as
Coca-Cola. Coke will dissolve teeth and bone. We know that to be true. So
true.
That's
very true.
Coke will clean blood.
Hmm.
Urban legend claim highway patrolman offices with Coke in the trunk of the car to clean up blood after traffic accidents.
Ooh.
Look at that. Coke will get you high.
Oh, we'll
in 1885, there might have been some truth to Coke getting you high, as it was made With a bit
cocaine.
Of?
Cocaine.
There you
cocaine.
Go.
Yes, I knew was. That one.
But today, coke is rumored to get you high when paired with aspirin.
Yes, that's also
that's it.
True.
Scientifically, there is no truth of that being the case, but there seems to be many teens who still believe that.
It used to be.
So.
And also, Coca-Cola in Atlanta is stronger than it is any other region of the country.
That's because they make it there.
That's right.
And of course, you know, if you're having company over and you don't have any cleaning products, coke will clean your toilet. The acids in Coca-Cola are rumored to be a terrific toilet bowl cleaner. Pour the coke in and let it sit and foam for an hour. Scrubbing bubbles.
There you have it.
So the acid should remove the stain.
That doesn't work because I've tried that.
I'm telling you, man, that's scary.
But you probably buy that cheap coke in that they sell in Western Beef. That you know. Who knows
Western
what's in
Beef?
No, I get the cherry coke and it doesn't clean my commode.
Well, cherry coke is.
There you go.
A derivative.
There's still a ring around my.
And it's a ring of coke now. It's permanently stained. So
with no cocaine.
Why even bother?
You know what cleans chrome?
What?
It'll blow your mind. For anybody out there, and this is I know this for a fact because I've gotten a lot of different antiques and stuff that have been chrome. I needed to clean it. And someone turned me on to this, and I couldn't believe it. You just take aluminum foil, Reynolds wrap, not Reynolds, you know, Reynolds aluminum foil.
Yes.
And you just get some water, and you just like a little thing of water. And you put the aluminum foil in water and just wipe it over the chrome, and it'll turn. The liquid will turn black, and the chrome will shine, and instantly it'll blow your mind. So all these chrome cleaners that they put out have aluminum flakes in them, from what I heard, and that's what. So when you buy an aluminum cleaner,
or
you're
aluminum
buying
oxide,
aluminum. Because aluminum does something with water against chrome and cleans the chrome, makes it shine.
And there you have it.
So there you have it. So you don't need to buy any kind of chrome cleaner. Just
no Brasso, none of that stuff. Just
nope.
Use the water and the aluminum foil.
That's all you got to do.
All right.
Blow your mind.
Yes.
Wow, cleaning chrome.
Cleaning
thoughts.
Chrome.
Thoughts. 212-209-2900.
Yes. We have moments left.
We have what?
We have moments left. So call before...
This is the show without Mike, unfortunately.
It's the Mikeless show.
Yes.
It's like the vegan show. So we're Mike-free. We're Mike-free.
So what else can you use coke for?
But that's, we had six things right there. And
you can use, you could make Jaeger bombs.
You can make, Danny's making Jaeger bombs with it right now. But yeah, good morning, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, who's this?
This is John.
Good morning, John.
Hi, John. Is it your birthday?
Driving in my car. Smoking my cigar.
Okay, John.
Hey.
Yeah.
You know what you got to do? You got to tell everybody that those hats with all the fur that unclip and the fur goes in front of your face.
Yes.
Well, are you sure you're driving?
I'm positive I'm driving.
Okay. Yeah,
that's good.
So anyway, you put that hat on backwards. And it ends up being on the right way.
Okay.
Because when you unclip that fur in the front, if you have it in the back, it protects your cervical spine.
Okay.
It keeps it all warm and shit.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right, get rid of him.
And if you say get rid of them.
Elaine is like...
I'm over.
Unbelievable.
Elaine is like,
morning,
are you driving? Driving?
He's got the fur over his face is what's happening.
Stick the cigar in your eye and pull over.
P.A., good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, everybody.
Good morning.
I think the other thing that Coca-Cola is good for is washing your eyes out after being hit by tear gas.
Whoa. Wow. Well,
because I've
why does that happen so often?
Well, maybe not.
So if you're out at a protest,
so
bring your Coca-Cola.
The next time you rob a convenience store, please
how
bring
do you
Coke.
Know this?
I've seen footage of people in Oaxaca, the teachers' movement, when they were fighting against the riot police, and they got slammed with tear gas. And I've seen them. I think they were mixing it with something, but they were pouring Coca-Cola into each other's eyes.
Wow!
They're rushing out of the tear gas.
Dangerous.
Wow!
Maybe they were thirsty.
I think they mixed it with something else, but I don't remember what it was. But I think just Coca-Cola by itself could
Well, I know in the theater we use
protesters out there facing up the riot patrol.
In the theater,
could perhaps it like remove Coca-Cola. Makeup? Maybe well, that was what they were doing.
The messed up thing is that we may have to contribute to Coca-Cola in order to save our eyes from tear gas.
Yes, of course.
We need to create our own Coca-Cola.
Well, then
organic Coca-Cola. Is that what you're saying is better for you than
Coca-Cola?
Yeah,
organic.
That's a dangerous thought.
Thanks, everybody.
Yes,
thank you.
Oh, yes.
You sound cute.
Oy vey.
Now we use.
Did Mike give you anything that we were supposed to give out or announce, or was he just like?
No.
Mike gave her something else.
Pizza.
Mike gave her a Chuck E. Cheese.
He gave me a Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese.
I love Chuck E. Cheese. It's my birthday. My birthday.
So.
Yes.
Avatar broke the $1 billion mark.
It did.
Yes, it did. On its way to two.
Did you like it, Byron?
I loved it. I thought it was a very magical experience. You know, I saw it with my sons and.
Mm-hmm.
At Sony IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoyed it thoroughly. I kept holding my hand out, waiting to have one of those little furry things float into my hand.
Mm.
You know, and I got close. I could almost feel it. But you know, one thing that I noticed about the movie, I began to remember Cameron's Abyss.
Right. Yes.
There were several things in it that just reminded me so much of the Abyss.
Yeah, you know?
And I'm like, okay, I'm getting it. I'm with you.
He wanted to go so much further with the Abyss, and they clamped down on him.
They did. They really did.
But
he got it back in this one.
Well, he didn't have the credentials that he has now. I mean, now he's unstoppable. He can pretty much, you know... Somebody said to me that this was his, I don't know, sticking it to George Lucas. That's what somebody's comment was.
Really?
They were like, Cameron was just like going, like what Lucas should have done. Like how Lucas should have taken everything further. This was Cameron saying, hey, man, this is really what you should be doing, you know, taking everything to another level. And I don't know. That's what someone's comment was. I thought I'd bring that up to throw it out there. I don't know if I agree with it. That might be valid,
but, you know, I think the fact that the master movie makers, like, Lucas, Cameron, Spielberg, they are taking us to another dimension.
Yeah,
and it's really interesting. We're getting there. We're actually there.
Yeah, there was no turning back after, like, you know, Terminator 2. Yeah. And just, you know, I could watch Terminator 2 like right now and love every minute of it just because it was just so I just believe it
right,
you know, I believe it, and Avatar the same thing. You kind of get sucked into believing it, and that's what's amazing about films.
Yes.
No, I agree. Terminator 2, I have personally probably seen that 20 times, and I never get bored.
No,
ever.
You know, and actually the Abyss holds up. I think the Abyss is still just as interesting. The drama, it gets a little you know, kind of I don't know,
hokey.
Yeah, I guess kind of hokey. I just feel like I feel what Cameron just didn't. He just had to get. He had to get it done, and that's what it feels like.
Yeah,
feels rushed, huh?
Yeah, felt a little. But then, you know, I just watched Killer Clowns from Outer Space, and you know, Joe, that's Joe's favorite film, and
Killer Clowns from Outer.
Yeah, Joe, where'd you go? Where'd Joe go?
I
never even heard of that.
Joe, did you go to sleep?
No, I was just like listening to you guys talk because there was some intelligent conversation going on. I thought I'd just step out for a minute and let it happen.
But Joe, didn't you love Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
For its time, it was okay. You know, it was fun.
It holds up. I'm just watching. It still holds up.
Okay. You know, you live up there and, you know, you don't have that high download. Where
Byron,
you can...
Killer Clowns from Outer Space was a.
I don't think he could, you know.
Have you seen it? It's like a kind of like
with
I don't
the
know,
killer popcorn and
yeah.
The can't the
it's
the
these clown aliens that come.
It have
really
to be
stupid.
Clown aliens.
Yeah,
of
this
course.
Spaceship looks like a circus tent, of course. And
it's just really.
I know I've seen it. I'm sure that I've seen it.
And Mike had nothing to do with that movie, in fact. But anyway, so here's a new way terrorists can get you.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the student in Kiev who killed himself with his chewing gum?
No.
Yes. Apparently, he liked to dip the chewing gum in citric acid, you know, to give it a little zesty flavor.
And he overdid it?
He was hunched over a computer in his parents' house in the northern Ukraine city of Kanoptik when, whether by intention or inintention, the student dunked his gum into an unidentified chemical, popped it back into his mouth, and a loud pop was heard coming from his room.
So what happened?
Forensic examination established that the chewing gum was covered with an unidentified chemical substance. At the time of the news reports, the local forensic lab did not have the necessary equipment to identify the substance. Police found packets of citric acid and a similar-looking substance to believe an explosive material and think the student simply confused the packets.
So he...
He kaboomed.
Kaboomed. Basically.
Exactly.
So his, like, head blew off?
So
close.
He got some burst he wasn't intending on.
Right. It's gooey, like that gum, that freshen up gum.
Well, the gooey center wasn't in the gum. Yeah, the gooey center was his head all over the place.
Could you imagine just chewing the gum?
There you go. So Chris is now looking this story up so he can go and make...
No, I'm actually looking at Doomsday Clock to change this week. That's what I was reading. The minute hand of the famous Doomsday Clock is set to move this Thursday. Anyone with internet access can watch.
Now,
which way the hand will move.
Yeah, is it moving closer to the day?
And how much has not been made public? The event will take place at 10 a.m. on January 14th at the New York Academy of Science building in New York City.
Okay.
While the actual clock is housed at the Bulletin of Atomic Science offices in Chicago, a representation of the clock will be changed at Thursday's press conference.
Now, are we getting closer to the doomsday?
Well, they don't know. The last time the doomsday clock hand moved was in January 2007 when it was pushed forward by 2 minutes.
Wow.
From 7 to 5 minutes before midnight. The change was meant to reflect two major sources of potential catastrophe that could bring us closer to doomsday, according to the board of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, a magazine focused on warning the world of the dangers that the invention of the atomic bomb helped to unleash.
Right.
According to the board, the looming dangers include the perils of 27,000 nuclear weapons, 2,000 of them ready to be launched within minutes, and the destruction of human habitats from climate change. The factors influencing the latest doomsday clock change include international negotiations on nuclear disarmament and non-proliferation, expansion of civil nuclear power, the possibilities of nuclear terrorism, and climate change. So we'll hold our breath and see if we move forward or back.
I see you're going.
Who cares?
Forward.
It's my birthday. Anyway. What are the most annoying words of 2010? Shovel ready? Y'all use that?
Shovel ready.
No, I have a project that is shovel ready at the museum.
Exactly.
The
probably
farmhouse
got several.
Museum, you know.
Pitchfork ready.
Actually, speaking of which, Byron, real quick, what's going on at the farmhouse this week?
Well, we have our school groups that are continuing to visit us twice a day at 10 and 11 a.m., and then, of course, on the weekend, we have, we're open for Saturday tours at 11 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m., where you can come and visit New York City and New York State's oldest historic landmark. It has 3 centuries of the house there, the oldest being built in 1652, with the latest being completed in the 1800s. So you have 3 centuries of a house, New York City's and New York State's oldest historic landmark, 5816 Clarendon Road. For more details, call 718-629-5400. That's the Wyckoff Farmhouse Museum. Thank you.
And thank you for that, Mr. Saunders.
Well, you know, it's actually important, Byron. You know, you are involved in the community, and you are making a difference. You know, every kid or child that comes through, gets exposed to some history, and it's important.
It really is, and it's amazing because kids cannot imagine 11 people living in this one small space, but that's exactly what happened. It was a family, that survived and sustained without all the amenities that we have today. Think about it, 1652, and every child survived. That's very good family structure, family tree there. And so, yes, it's a very important place. One of the 10 oldest wooden structures in the United States.
Wow.
So there you have it.
Termites keep out.
Yeah, stay away.
True or false?
Okay.
True or false? Vacationing couple discovers dead body under their hotel bed.
Ooh.
What?
No.
True, probably.
Where?
True.
Where is it in Oregon?
This is Las Vegas, true. I'm sure.
Yep. In the Baby Train, folklorist John Harold Brindman writes that he first heard the dead body found under the hotel bed legend in 1991. So in their reports, and then July 10th, 2008, a man checked into a Capri Motel just east of downtown Kansas City and began complaining about a foul odor in his room.
No kidding.
Oh, man.
Management told him nothing could be done about the problem, and he spent 3 nights in his room before checking out because he could no longer stand the smell.
Oh, my gosh.
When the cleaning staff came in to make up the room on July 13th, they lifted the mattress and underneath found a man's body in an advanced state of decomposition.
Oh, my goodness.
So, there you go. That's a true one.
Yeah.
That's a true one.
Was the guy cute?
I don't know.
Did you bring your top 10 list, Joe?
I'll bring it next week.
Oh.
No, Elena would get that right off the bat.
What, your top 10?
No, one of these things here.
Oh, well,
true
then
or false? Cuckolded husband presents his wife with the head of her lover.
Wow. That's devotion.
Yep.
How'd you get the head?
Our grisly tale begins with a newspaper clipping from December 1993. An American soldier cut off the head of his pregnant wife's lover and put it on the bedside table in the hospital where she was about to give birth. A spokesman at the German public prosecutor's office said on Wednesday. The angry husband struck out on Tuesday when his rival, a fellow GI in the American 11th Cavalry, was phoning the woman from nearby Sickles Military Field. Look at that. Let's see. Chris would get a kick out of this one. Chris, true or false?
What?
Hanging man in farmhouse turns out to be corpse of outlaw.
True.
True. So.
Is it true?
Yes. In December 1976, at Universal Studios, camera crews arrived at the New Pike Amusement Park in Long Beach, California, to film an episode of the television action show The $6 Million Man. In prepping the set in a corner of the funhouse, a worker moved the hanging man, causing one of the prop's arms to drop off. Inside it was human bone. This was no mere prop. This was a dead guy. The body was that of Elmer McCurdy, a young man who in 1911 robbed a train of $46 and two jugs of whiskey in Oklahoma. There you go.
What did you just like type in find dead people? Is that what you're...
No, I didn't just
where
type
did you...
In.
Yeah, every article...
I found dead people.
Or like, where's the... No. You know, like, it's just too out, man.
No. That wasn't... John Wayne's autopsy revealed 40 pounds of impacted fecal matter lodged in his colon. True or false?
False.
That's false.
False.
Father Parks is struck atop a leaf pile containing his daughter, killing her.
What happens?
Father Parks is struck atop a leaf pile containing his daughter, killing her.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that did happen.
That's true. Suicide victims have been mistaken for Halloween decorations.
What kind of people?
Suicide victim. True.
Yeah, that would be true.
So, Joe's got some good stuff.
Life is ironic and life is bizarre.
Yep.
Unfortunately.
Corpse of a hide-and-seek playing bride is years later found in a locker in a locked trunk.
She had a great hiding place, didn't she?
That's false.
Yeah.
Grandma's mortal remains are stolen along with the car she was being transported on. That's false. So, There you go. Well, why are you laughing? It's false. He's laughing.
No, because it's just, you just I'm just thinking of, like, how did you find this list? Like, what were you thinking?
I know,
like,
these things. I know.
You know,
these.
It's like,
So,
have you seen any flicks? What's the latest, like,
Have you seen any flicks?
Yeah.
I don't know. We were supposed to have tickets, I guess, to give out or something like that, but Mike didn't follow up to, but to give Elena that so we could do that, so.
No, he didn't give me anything.
So.
Well, but you didn't see anything? You had to have seen something.
What did I see? What did I see? What did I see before I left? Oh, well, I ran the interview with the guys from Daywalkers.
Right, you saw that.
Daybreakers, sorry. So, we did that. That was good. That was a lot of fun. Good cast. The phones are ringing. BAI, good morning. BAI, good morning. Hello?
Yeah, hi again.
Yes.
You mean John Wayne didn't have 40 pounds of fecal matter stuck in his colon?
No, he didn't have it.
He drank it all away.
There you go.
That's
I'm not touching
I thought that was true.
No, sorry.
He was the best.
No prize for you.
Good try, though.
Thank you.
You can still meet me after.
Yeah, good morning. You're on the air.
Byron.
Speak to me.
How many acres are you on?
1.5.
Do you have a kitty train?
Do you have a kitty train?
No.
No kitty train. No petting zoo?
No.
Shouldn't these be questions for me?
You got a horse and a cart?
No blacksmith?
No, none of that.
You have a blacksmith.
Do you have chaps?
Different color, Byron?
Well, we...
got a whitesmith?
Like, we've got what's the store that you've got over there in Portland? The red
the red house.
The red house
at the red house.
Yes,
is that what the burgers are?
No.
Or Byron.
A red
house. Our farmhouse museum is more reflecting of the time when Brooklyn was an agrarian place, and many of the farms and produce that kept New York alive came out of Brooklyn and Queens.
What year was that?
1652.
52.
Yes.
Do you have a chapel?
Well, there is one close by, and it's the Dutch Reformed Church. Which
Dutch
is,
Reformed?
Yes.
And that was the religion of the Wyckoffs, right?
Yes.
Ah. Uh-huh.
And that church still stands. It's over at Flatlands, Flatbush and King's Highway. There's a Dutch Reformed church there. There are many Wyckoffs that are buried in.
And is the original structure?
Plot. Yes, there is. But, of course, that church had several add-ons to it. But, yes, there are still remnants of the original church structure.
What was the most amazing thing that you found in the museum, or that you've looked at or seen that just blows your mind? Like, what?
Well, the most amazing thing is in the house that was built in 1652. There is a piece of the wall which is visible to visitors, and inside that wall there is a. You see how the brick and mortar was formed.
Uh-huh.
And because it was a farm, farmers used everything they had to as sealant. And one of the things that's still inside that wall is a corn cob that was put there in 1600s.
Wow.
As filler.
Wow.
As filler to the wall and as part of the mortar.
Wow. Also, it's got like that weird-looking concrete kind of mortar stuff.
Yeah, and they used seashells, ground seashells, as the plaster, because the seashells provided an illumination, so that by day, when the windows were open, the light would catch the glimmer off of the seashells, and at night the fire,
right, candlelight, order.
The candlelight, mm-hmm. and the fire from the open fire pit would also illuminate the wall. So the technology that was used by settlers at that time was amazing. I mean, the Dutch have been green for over 357 years, and it's amazing the technology that now we are claiming as
as energy conservation was actually being used back during those days as well.
Good morning, you're on WBAI.
Joey.
Yes.
Chrissy. The yeah. birthday girl. Byron.
Yeah.
Now I know the show's almost over.
Listen.
We're all here.
Speaking of Lee Majors.
Yes.
I don't know if this is life is like science fiction or just, you know, you're getting old when you're watching TV and Lee Majors comes on and makes a reference to the bionic. You know, he's selling the bionic ear. Have you seen that commercial?
Yes, I've seen it. He says, you may remember me as a $6 million man.
But you're the young one, so. But Chris, Byron, and Joe, you haven't seen
yeah,
that commercial
yet? Yeah,
he's
selling the bionic hearing aid.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably that's not a surreal moment.
Yeah. He looks
it was
good.
Surreal, man. I had that moment, too.
So what? The bionic woman is selling
the hearing aid.
The mattress.
So I can hear conversations across the room.
That's the best. All right, people.
All right, yes, you have a great day.
There you go.
That was funny, just funny.
Could you imagine if they got together and then he'd have, like, the bionic hearing aid and she has the bionic, you know, mattress, and then he could hear every bounce and every... It might help the orgasm. You wouldn't even need Viagra.
Whoa.
Elena's just off on her own trip.
Just think of the rhythm.
Because
he could hear everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows exactly where to, like, pinpoint the mattress.
Did we have a theme for tonight, Joe?
No,
we didn't.
Yeah, we're actually... We're having, like, what do they call it? A treasure hunt tonight. And if you can find Mike Sargent and bring him to the station before
the
show.
No, you know, Mike just, you know, he took Elena out. He felt a little tired. He took the cab, and he booked uptown.
He
put an egg in his shoe and beat it.
Joe's going to cover the
Actually,
show.
Actually, he's
so
still in my bag
right
now.
Yeah, good morning. You're on the air. What's the number here, Elena?
212-209-2900.
There you go. Yeah, good morning. You're on the air.
Hey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know that fellow who, well, there's a Dutch Reformed church in Brooklyn, another one on Flatbush and Church.
Yes.
That's a good one. Did you mention that?
There are several.
There's several,
yeah. The one on Church. I know exactly what you're talking about.
There's a fellow who called in about the Coca-Cola and the cleaning of the eye for, what was that? For tear gas.
Tear gas, yes.
And then he called back, and I concur. I also thought that he was talking, you know, that John Wayne did have that stuff in his gut. But, you know, that fellow, I think he belongs to the same co-op that I belong to.
Huh.
And he's a fascinating fellow.
Okay.
Fascinating.
He homeschools his child, his son.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to, if that's him, say, hats off to you. I wish I was homeschooled when I was a kid.
Why do you wish you were homeschooled?
Well, I remember saying to someone the other day that if I ever had children, I would never, ever, ever put them in public school, especially in New York City, because it's just... And maybe it's because, you know, my socioeconomic, where I'm from and all that kind of stuff, but it's just terrible. You know, what they teach them, what they don't teach them, how they try to corral them, and, you know, from... You name it. You know, you look at New York City and you see what's going on in the school system. It's just terrible.
Where did you grow up?
Flatbush, for the most part, Crown Heights area.
Right.
So do you wonder sometimes how you survived?
Well, I know how I survived. You know, barely survived.
No, I'm saying. I mean, I don't know how I survived. I don't know how I survived either. I just, you know, thought about that quite a lot. But
yeah,
you know,
guy,
because
you
it just, I mean, easy. I mean, at, during that time, I mean, even, you know, I don't know. It just seems like we were living in dangerous times and we didn't even know it. I don't know.
You know what I remember when I was a kid, that I think it was fifth grade, somebody came to my school in science, and they said that in the years like 2000, that people would not be working the way they're working now. What they said was there'd be so many people in the U.S. that people would just have to work by half the amount of hours. And I thought it was just so cool. You know, I was looking forward to it.
And lo and behold, they call it unemployment.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
But thank you, folks, for the show.
You're welcome.
And you know, you had asked me.
I did.
I'd hung up. You'd asked me earlier.
Yes.
About, I said I didn't like horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something when I hung up.
I said, do you like science fiction better? That's why. That's the other. Usually, if you don't like horror, you like science fiction. I know. That's what I was asking.
Yeah, I like science fiction.
Yeah. A lot of people, if you like horror, you don't like as much science fiction. So you a Star Trek fan or not? Or
I like Star Trek, but I'm more Matrixy.
Matrix. Okay. Interesting.
I like when Chris is here and Mike is, and I can just put the show on autopilot and relax.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean put it on autopilot? We don't have the music playing and fighting over music and total
there's
chaos.
Music. There's music
there's
playing.
No fighting. It's
no,
good.
Yeah,
I like the music.
It's more
Mike blasts his music. And
oh,
it's very
you
hard
can't
to
even
talk.
Hear.
You're fighting it.
It's because he's going. In addition to losing his short-term memory, he's going deaf.
Is he going deaf? You think Mike's? Oh.
I think so.
No.
He talks very loud.
He always hears me.
Huh?
But
he's good at reading lips.
He breathes very loudly.
Joe, you grew up in Brooklyn. Byron, where'd you grow up?
Queens.
Washington, D.C.
You grew up in Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
So, do you feel the same way? Like, do you feel that way? Like, I was lucky to survive, or...
No, actually, I feel as if I was given something special, because growing up in Washington, D.C., being at the seat of government during the 50s and the 60s, the height of, you know, the civil rights movement, JFK, Robert Kennedy, Johnson. I mean, I think I was very privileged to be a witness to a lot of great history that our country is now.
Did you attend any of Martin Luther King's speeches at all? Did you? Or
yes.
Which ones did you?
Well, the most memorable one for me is the March on Washington. I did go to the Poor People's Campaign.
Uh huh.
The memory is that I became a man that weekend, a young man given responsibility by my father and my aunts and uncles who came from around the country to go to the March on Washington. And I have to tell you that on that particular day, there was a certain level of fear in the city because nobody knew what was going to happen, and people were coming from everywhere. I saw them coming in on bicycle, on roller skate, and caravans, people walking in, coming down Route 1. And I wanted to go to the march very badly. I was 12 years old, and my father pulled me to the side and said, "Listen, son, I know you want to go down here with me. This is very important, but nobody knows what is going to happen. I need you to do one thing for me. Stay home and take care of my family. Because if anything does happen to me, you are the man of the house." And so at that point, because we wanted to go downtown to the mall, the Reflecting Pool and Lincoln Memorial, my mother took me and my sisters and walked up to Rhode Island Avenue, which is U.S. Route 1, and watched people coming in my remembrance of the March on Washington, while my father and my aunts and uncles all went to the march.
And who's speaking?
Well, Martin Luther King.
No, you. Who's?
Oh, this is Byron. This is Byron speaking. And my memory of a lot of the history of our country. I mean, I was at the Capitol when John F. Kennedy, the funeral, I went into the rotunda with my parents and stood outside right there at the turn where that very famous picture of little John walking. Mm-hmm. I saw that in reality. I was there.
What was that moment like walking into the rotunda? What was that like?
It was a moment of sadness, very very unique kind of sadness, because the country was in total mourning for a young president that was symbolizing a young America. You know, we had just had Dwight Eisenhower as president.
True.
And so we were looking at a young family, and it was very painful. It's something that's indelible in terms of my memory of my own youth and growing up and being a part of history that is now you turn back and look at the pictures and you reflect on the moment, the spirit, the time. I remember it like it was yesterday.
So Byron.
Yes.
Well, thanks. I can dig you on another level. I'm curious,
mm-hmm.
and it's no pun or anything intended. But when you said that, when your father said, take care of the family if I don't come in.
Yes.
Do you remember a song around that time called Patches?
Patches. Yeah. Sure. Sure.
Yeah,
I remember
cool.
Patches. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
We were a country of symbols during that period. And as much as the rest of the country, I'm sure, felt it, being in Washington, D.C. was rather unique. And of course, when you're there in the capital and all the business is all politics, and that is Washington, D.C. It's Rome. There were moments where it was magical, and there were moments where the sadness was like no other as a result of the tragedy that we all endured. I mean, I met Bobby Kennedy. I shook his hand the week before he got killed.
Really?
Yes.
Now, have you done a lot of research, or have you heard stuff, even here on WBAI, about, not to take anything away again,
right,
about the reality of the situation, or, politics being what it is in the U.S.? And does that take anything away?
No, it actually, it's interesting because when I went to college, I went to the University of Kansas, and I found that Kansas was like 10 years behind everything. Okay, I mean, it's like walking into a
time
war.
It's like total land.
Yeah, it's really. I mean, and I have much respect for the Midwest, mm-hmm. and for the kind of populism that exists there. So I have an appreciation for it. But I found that the further you got away from Washington D.C., the further you got away from New York City, the less people knew about the government, or the fact that Washington D.C. is a colony. Most people don't have any idea what District of Columbia really is all about.
But my question was really asking, do you think that we really know about the government?
No, we don't. We don't teach it.
No, I'm talking about even in D.C. Do we, even us today, talking
well, today,
on the radio, do we know what's really going on?
Well, today I think the veil of secrecy and yes, that you I hear where you're going with it. I think that a lot of what our country used to stand for with respect to transparency has been clouded by deception. I mean,
But even the Kennedy thing, you think that we were very transparent then?
We were coming close to it. Remember,
I don't think we were. No, I gotta disagree, man.
We were at least making
an
attempt.
We knew less then than we probably know now.
Well,
I agree with that.
Well, see, I mean, when you're in Washington D.C., you get a different perspective,
right?
So ultimately, you
but
know
like you
more
said,
about.
It doesn't reach to Kansas. It doesn't,
no, it doesn't.
Reach to.
Why?
Tennessee.
Why'd you wind up going to Kansas? There's got to be a good reason.
Hey, thank you.
You're laughing.
I'm laughing because I appreciate it and everything. I hear you, and I really appreciate it hearing Byron speak. But I think what Elena said, and I said earlier, and she said, and someone else said, yeah, because when I hear all the, let's just say facts. Let's just say that about that time, from the Bay of Pigs to the to with the nuclear stuff.
Oh
to,
yeah, that was
to the
real.
Mob, to all this kind of stuff that was to Maryland. To all the stuff that was going on. I don't know if we really if we know what's going on.
I agree with you too. I think the Bay of Pigs. I mean, that was like one step, 5 minutes away from nuclear war, and Kennedy was quite willing to go the distance.
Well,
sort of 5 minutes away. They just did a special on the History Channel last week,
mm-hmm.
and it was the 24 hours following the Kennedy assassination. In other words, they from the Kennedy assassination, they broke it down into minutes. So, 10 minutes after he had been shot, all the way for 24 hours. And the information that they had brought out that has been documents that had just gotten disclosed recently. I learned so much in the 24 hours that I didn't even know existed, and I don't want to there were so many things and facts that if you get to watch it, you'll see what I'm talking about. There's just so many things that we did not even know in reference to Johnson, not even knowing that that Kennedy was dead, and no one informed him for at least an hour and a half. And then them trying to remove Kennedy's body, the Dallas police did not want to release the body because they wanted to have an autopsy done there. And the Secret Service is standing there with Jackie, and they had to push their way with the coffin out through the Dallas police because they said, we're leaving with the body, even though they weren't supposed to do that. They really weren't supposed to.
Wow.
So just like fact after fact of what was going on and who was doing this, and it's just, I was just like, wow. So that's why I say I don't think, you know, every day I watch something and I learn something else that we don't know. So, or at least I didn't know, and I don't think we will ever know everything about everything. You know, we're just getting facts. So I would say that I don't know if we know what's going on. You
True.
Know, I mean, do they get into the White House and then they show them the aliens and that's when they go, you know,
Chris?
That's when the president goes, okay, well, you know, does anything else really
that
matter?
Would be
you know, I don't know.
Chris, I have one thing
that's,
to say.
That's Cameron's
wow,
next movie.
You're awesome. You're so special. I really like you. Let's be friends.
Right, they show them the aliens.
There you go. Happy birthday again. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you.
I want to know why you went to Kansas, Bart. I still, you're laughing.
Okay.
Why did you go to Kansas?
Hello.
Because the aliens
Hello?
Were there.
Hello. Anyone
I wanted,
there?
I wanted to get as far
Anyone?
Away from Washington
Anyone?
As I possibly could.
Hello.
I picked
Hello.
The middle of the United States.
Anyone there? Anyone?
And
Anyone?
Then, and then when it was time for me to go, I was clicking my heels three times every day. It's like, there's no place like home.
No, did you?
No
did was the
like
Wizard
home.
Of Oz affected you to make you go to Kansas?
No,
or?
No, actually
okay.
not. I only acknowledged it when I was there that I began to realize what the Wizard of Oz was more about. I mean, literally, my political science teacher had us read the book as an exercise in political populism for the Midwest. So I got an appreciation of the Wizard of Oz and its analogies and all that it was supposed to mean for a populous state. So Kansas, oh, what a wonderful place.
You were there for how long, 4 years?
Two and a half years, yes. In fact, my sister graduated. I had two sisters graduated from Kansas. University of Kansas.
When y'all just get stuck in the same car?
They came after me. They followed me for some reason. They
How
followed
the heck did
me.
That happen?
I don't know.
Wait
Joe?
A second.
No, wait. I'm in the trunk.
Wait
I guess
a second.
I'll go here to school.
What?
So do you sometimes ponder how you ever survived the 70s?
Oh, absolutely.
Up in Brooklyn? Oh, you were in Queens, right?
I was in Queens.
Yeah, Joe was in Queens. He's,
and
he's
your recollections? Because it's heavy, man. I mean, you have to think about that from time to time.
You know, we had this conversation earlier today, and it's actually because you're in a special place in your life. So that's why you're having these thoughts.
Yeah. Who, me?
Yes.
I'm not having these thoughts.
The AARP is knocking on your door.
Right.
No,
you
that's
and
not.
You're like sending your.
You're like thinking about
money for
how
your
did
car.
I get here and where
no,
am I going?
That's,
and
that's not what you know.
10 years from now, somebody's going to be changing my diapers again.
I had the thought when Sonia Sotomayor became the Supreme Court Justice, and that's somebody that I could have that my sisters went to school with. And they all graduated from the same high school, so did my brother. They all graduated, and they were my sisters were a year behind, and my sister had rice and beans at Sonia's house.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just very heavy to me that, you know, how far we are coming as a country and how, you know, it's just I just find it fascinating.
I think that was all
that
just an excuse just to be able to say that you knew her.
Exactly.
No.
Chris
I think
bragging again.
I'm not bragging about that. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to brag.
It's all heavy.
And
they had rice
bread.
And beans.
It goes along with the same thought of just
my sisters
I
had rice
it,
and beans at her house.
Well, I didn't know that.
You
I
know,
find it fascinating.
Elena, you sit here and after a while you listen to Chris talk and you just have to say to yourself,
what?
You know,
hello, hello, anyone there? Anyone? Anyone?
Hello.
There you go. That's, you know.
That should be your answer.
If anyone is there, they're having rice and beans.
So get Ben's done on your phone.
And they're going to be the next Supreme Court justice.
So that's what you should do, Chris. The next time Mike calls you up and says he'll call you back in like 2 hours,
you should
call him and leave this on his voice.
Hello. Hello. Anyone there? Anyone? Anyone?
I thought that was a real caller before.
Hello.
I really thought.
Hello.
I was like, come on, just talk.
Anyone there? Anyone?
You like these things, I find. I know you do.
No, I find it fascinating when I'm able to talk to Mike for more than 10 minutes. Don't you, Byron?
Oh, we have some very interesting conversations.
No, I know we haven't, but how do you, you know, when you, after it goes like the 10-minute mark, you're like, why is Mike still talking to me? This doesn't make any sense.
Is that
because after 10 minutes, he's like, hold on.
Is this him calling in one of these ones? I don't know. B.A., good morning. You're on the air. Hello?
I got Puerto Ricans in my building. Leave me alone.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
It's your lucky.
And he's
probably
all contaminants in his water.
212-209-2900. Y'all need to call us quick because
we got like 5 minutes and then we're out of here.
That's it. We're gone.
We're gone. It happened.
And
it's
what
over.
Everybody say, it's my birthday. Eat me, birthday.
You know.
You guys got to take her out for birthday tonight.
No,
okay?
I don't.
You
got to
continue the party.
What's up, gangsters? Support academic freedom. Get expelled.
There you go.
Is that a new another? Did you get that? Do you have that?
Yes, I do.
That's your CEO. You're not.
I'm out there. What can I say?
I'm going to call you tomorrow, Joe. I got to change some things, by the way.
Hopefully you got your credit card handy.
Hopefully it's your shorts.
I got to change something, but it's okay.
All right.
I got to change the hotel.
Oh, that's easy enough.
Yeah, no.
That's easy.
Things are always changing. Why is that?
I don't know. We're in a constant state of change.
So Byron graduated from Kansas. University of Kansas?
Actually, I graduated from Hampton Institute, which is now Hampton University in Hampton, Virginia. I transferred from University of Kansas to Hampton.
Oh, and so you went to Kansas for two and a half years?
Mm-hmm.
And then you went to Hampton University?
Yes. And graduated in 73.
Political science? What did you graduate in?
Speech and drama. I changed my major from political science and pre-law to speech and drama in Kansas, and hey diddly dee, an actor's life for me.
I got to ask you this, though. Did you ever feel out of place in Washington?
Oh, no. I felt Washington was like no other city. I mean, I felt very comfortable in Washington. And knowing things that some people would never ever know, because when you're in Washington, you're privy to the political machinations of and what's all that's going on.
Machinations.
Yes, lots of it. Lots of machinations.
Eating machinations.
That's right. Due to machinations, you know. But you felt when you hear the news. And you're watching what's coming out of Washington, D.C., most people just hear sound bites. They don't, you know, they don't know the city and its construct, or the Gold Coast, or, you know, what goes on within the inner city. It's a very unique place, like no other.
Elena had that Georgia thing.
Georgia.
Do you look back, Elena, thinking that sometimes as well, or not, or just is it just me? You survived growing up
in Tennessee. You're talking
in
about
Tennessee. I meant not Tennessee.
Tennessee.
Georgia.
Tennessee. Memphis.
It's definitely a different dynamic, but you know, like Byron has said, it's riveting in a different way. Whereas, we don't have the beat of politics going on and some of those riveting experiences with Kennedy and
Johnson.
Did you ever meet
Elvis? You were in Memphis, right? Elvis, that was that time period, right?
I didn't meet him. I was at my friend's house when he died, and I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it one more time. I was at my friend's house, and they didn't even really like me anyway, so I was like, when they announced that he had passed that day on 77, I think.
Yep.
I remember running across the street to my mom's house, back to my mom, thinking she was going to be hysterical. And she wasn't. but it just kind of took a lot out of the city, but not. He was just there. I mean, that was pretty much it. And I don't think that really defines Memphis. But Memphis has a lot of demons. I think Atlanta, what you were saying about Atlanta, I think they're similar. Mm-hmm. Parallel, even. But,
what do you mean by demons?
I don't think the Civil War is quite over yet.
They're still fighting it in the South.
Mm-hmm.
Really, truly. And it's unfortunate. It really is.
In what way?
Well, the concept of... We all know about the controversy of the rebel flag.
Yep.
We wouldn't have that controversy if it was retired and defeat of war. So they, because they didn't retire it, some people still claim it.
Mm.
And some people are, those same, some people who have claimed it are still fighting the war. So, and it's unfortunate because now that the Mexicans are everywhere, it's no longer a black and white issue. It's an issue of diversity and really appreciating the different cultures that make up our country. And we have a very serious challenge ahead of us in order to go beyond, go to the next level of our development.
I mean, one of the, and I'll probably never talk, I hope I probably shouldn't talk about this, but one thing, when you grow up there, you are Southern. And that's it. I mean, I didn't even know my ethnicity, I mean, I knew, but, like, I didn't think of that. And it was also, it was good, and I've seen, you know, I've seen other writers talk about this as well, and the homogeneous factor in that, where it's just like Jewish, I don't care if you're Jewish, I don't care if you're this or that or whatever. On the other hand, though, or it's different up, you know, what I found when I moved up here to the Northeast, it's, you know, everyone, like, you know, takes advantage of learning, you know, other people's, like, backgrounds and you know, ethnicities, and that's, you know, a pleasure and, you know, a privilege. In the South, then you take it to the other, you know, to the other
extreme
where it's a benefit where nobody's different. Except that there are those histories.
The vestiges of leftover stories.
Yes.
On that note,
yes.
A special edition of Night Shift
is brought to you by the letter B for Byron Saunders.
Next week,
we shall return the station to its usual loud
insanity.
We gave you a glimpse
of what the world could be like.
Yes. Life will be like science fiction. Next
exactly.
Not to peer in.
Up next here on WBAI. 99.5
Great
FM
jazz.
In New York City. I have some pre-recorded show.
Oh.
So,
Joe, this is my first show with you.
All the world.
This is
world jazz.
Yeah. World jazz.
World
there
jazz.
You go.
Hooray.
Now, do you know the original name of jazz? What it was originally identified as?
I don't know. I'm confused with that statement.
Okay. Jazz is an acronym that was given,
hurry up,
named as
2 seconds.
But the original name of jazz
was
Jackass Music.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, true story.
Isn't that special?
It is very special.
Is the first show you've done with Joe Wen since when?
But just by ourselves.
Anyway.
Are you sure about
happy
that?
Happy birthday, yeah. Elena.
Thank
until
you.
Until next week, Byron, Chris.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you to
Joe.
Everyone.
Fun. Yes, Chris.
Y'all take care, please.
I love you.
you've been listening to The Night Shift on WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. Listener-sponsored, commercial-free radio. We also are coming to you live on the web at www.wbai.org. And if you've missed part of this program or any program throughout the listening day here at WBAI, you can go to WBAI.org and look it up on the archives and listen to some of your favorite shows available there for you to download. Up next is The World Jazz, here for your listening pleasure on WBAI.
Remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.